Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of a fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com. This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tenkata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tenkata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tenkata Fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tenkata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tenkata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TenkataFabrics.com.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Joe Netter. I have been either volunteer or on-call firefighter for over 45 years. I've been connected with the FDIC since 2010, teaching here, but this is my 25th year consecutively of attending the FDIC. Strongly recommend every firefighter come at least once in their career. I think today my remarks are going to be more focused towards the volunteer on-call segment of the fire service, but I also think that all other firefighters can find some wisdom and inspiration in some of my remarks. I'd like to start talking a little bit about the volunteer fire service. One of the things I find as I travel about and I talk with volunteers from all over the country, so we have something in common. And that is, we go somewhere, we're meeting a new group of people, you're at a social event, whatever it might be. And someone says to you, "Oh, Joe, nice to meet you. What do you do?" And you tell them what you do for a living. You know, you're a carpenter, you're a businessman, whatever it might be. But then you also mention to them that you are a firefighter. We all do it. There's no denying it. We are so proud of it. But then you say something that you shouldn't have said. They go, "Oh, you're a firefighter." And then you pause and you go, "Well, I'm only a volunteer." I want you to think about that. Only a volunteer? Are you crazy? You're not. What is only? If a guy told you he was a businessman, but he was a part-time dentist, and he told you he's only a dentist, would you let him pull your teeth or drill? Of course not. By calling yourself only, you are saying something that is not only detrimental, but is an insult to our proud volunteer fire service. Now, with that said, understand my philosophy about being an on-call or volunteer firefighter. First of all, I believe there are only two types of people on the fire ground. The first are firefighters, and the second are civilians dressed as firefighters. Think about that, civilians dressed as firefighters. The second thing I will tell you is, I believe that all firefighters are equal, as long as they can do their job safely and efficiently in the communities in which they serve. And that is all backed up by their training. Are you training properly? Are you training frequently? Are you absorbing? Are you learning? Are you maintaining your skills? And the third thing I'll tell you is that I also believe that belt buckles, t-shirts, and 732 blinking lights in your pickup truck does not make a firefighter. Only one thing does, folks, and that's training. Training is the foundation for everything. So if you're telling me you're only a volunteer, one, you're insulting me. And two, it's making me think, how good a firefighter are you? Don't use that word only ever again. Please don't. And if you really feel that way, then step up and start training more. I think that I'm gonna start here. This is a book I wrote for fire engineering, and it's called Managing Risk in the Volunteer Fire Service. Now, am I giving myself a selfish plug here? Yeah, I don't make a lot of money selling books. I don't. That book is written for one purpose, And that is to help all of us in the volunteer service to better understand what risk really is to ourselves and how we can deal with it. When I was asked to write the book, it kind of came about in a crazy way. I have a class I teach on on officer training for volunteers. And one of the subjects was risk management. I felt that was important. So I went and I did all types of research and I put together the segment and started teaching it. And you know what? I was embarrassed to teach it. It stunk. I didn't understand what I was talking about. It stunk. So I began to realize no one understands risk management. When I say risk management, to this day, everyone goes, oh, community risk? And I go, no, let's start with the risk to ourselves first and then worry about our communities. So as I put the book together, I said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to address the important things that make us steer away from risk and understanding it. One is complexity. And if we look at the NFPA 1250 standard, it is very complex to read and understand. Nothing against the NFPA, nothing against them, but we're not all attorneys who can understand what they're writing. We're not. In it, they talk about contractual transfer techniques to reduce risk. I ask all of you, have you ever studied or learned in the fire service what a contractual transfer technique is? Of course not, but it's in the standard. And we need to understand it in much more simple terms. So complexity. Complacency is another big issue. What's complacency in our fine service? Words like, that's the way we do it here, because I said so. And what are you going to do, kid? Throw books at the fire if you've tried to better yourself? That's complacency. The third one is our culture. And we join and we think it's a culture of death. I don't know about you, but when I see no fear on a 21-year-old or a 19-year-old kid's fire helmet, it frightens me. How can he not be afraid? How can he not be afraid? And the skull and crossbone with the fire helmets signifies death. You're telling me you're not afraid to die? I don't know. In my many years of life and my 45 years of service, I really haven't met many people who have said to me, I don't care if I die. Of course not. So we need to understand, and that's what this book will help you to do, in plain, simple, easy to understand terms, what risk really is to us. And the focus is on the fire ground and emergency scenes. We explain to you some of the risks that we experience. For instance, the period of time I studied NIOSH reports was a 10-year period of time. In those 10 years, 527 firefighters died in the line of duty. Of those 527, 120, or about 24%, so call it a quarter, of them died while responding. They didn't even get to the fire and they were dead. That's atrocious. That's sad. But it's a level of risk that we need to address. Driver training, conducting ourselves safely. Get to the fire alive. Then I found out something else. I started looking at how we're dying. And everyone thinks about, they were consumed by the fire, smoke inhalation. Nah. The number one way firefighters in the volunteer service died in that study period was by heart attack. Heart attack. 57%, I believe, died of heart attack of that 527. Well, okay. At that point, when I was doing this, I was a bit younger. And I immediately figured out it was all those fine old men who go out and be fire police. And we hear about a line of duty death guy who just died at 82 years old directing traffic and had a heart attack. So I blamed the high number on them. And then I got into breaking it down. And I found that it almost works out evenly. 18 to 40 was about 25%. And then 40 to 50 was about 25, and then 50 to 60 something was 25, and then there up was 25%. It was even. So let's back into that and look about risk. Why are we losing firefighters 18 to 40 years old from heart attack? Think about that. What do you think is the core root of that? It's probably health and wellness. Are you taking care of yourself? Or do you think that, you know, I'm only a volunteer. Well, if you're only a volunteer, you don't belong on my fire ground. We need to take better care of ourselves. So we address driving and slowing down and learning to handle these big rigs, because you know what? A 60,000 pound truck company or ladder truck does not drive, stop, or handle like your Honda Civic. It doesn't. We have to understand these things. The third big thing that's now arising is cancer. What is your department doing? What are you doing to spread the word within your department of the dangers we face on a daily basis when it comes to cancer? You know, when I started back, and it was like, I think it was 1977, April 2nd, I was given a cotton duck coat and some pull-up boots and a tin helmet, and I was instantly a fireman. And I was so proud. I worked hard, I studied, I went to a lot of classes, I trained, I became obsessed with it. And I wanted to be the best I could. But I was doing something that all the other people were doing also. I lived a distance from the station. We were allowed to respond to the scene. Okay, so where did I put my gear? In the back. I had a Ford Bronco at the time, so it's a wide open inside. Go to a call, filthy, rotten, smelly gear, throw it in back. Beyond, as time went on, throw it in back. Throw it in, wash it? Are you crazy? I want that salty look. My kids were little, they'd get in the car and smell and go, Daddy went to a fire. And here's what I didn't know. That gear was absorbing carcinogens. And the heat of the sun coming through the glass of it would heat up the gear and could release those carcinogens. So in effect, I was poisoning the people in the vehicle with the potential of giving them cancer without even knowing it. I live to this day and pray that I have not given my children or my wife that disease because of not understanding what gear is and what it can do for us. So cancer needs to be addressed. But we need to focus on risk. So the first thing we need to do is understand what risk is to us. And our primary risk, of course, is the emergency scene, as I mentioned. So let's just talk about firefighting for a moment. It's our biggest emergency scene we go to. We need to understand what our risks are. So what are they? Is it the fire? Is it the smoke? Is it the activity? Is it the driving? What is it? We need to be able to identify it. And then we need to understand, once we know what it is, how we're going to control it, how we're going to contain it, and how we're going to eliminate it if possible. And then we need to understand, thinking that, what actions we are going to take to achieve that goal. So how do we do that? Back to my one word, training. You know, I had a chief named Pete Ostrowski, and Peter has gone on to become the state fire marshal for Massachusetts. And when we were working together, where we were, he used to joke, because whenever he'd get up and give a talk to the membership or anything, he'd always go, and before I forget, I got to say the word training or Joe Netter will be upset with me. Because that's what I believe. Everything we do comes back to one thing, training. If you don't train, can you do the job? So I contend, and I'm actually doing a class here tomorrow at 1:30, training as a method for the reduction of risk on the volunteer fire, in the volunteer fire service or volunteer fire ground, however you want to word it. Think of it, training. What do we need to train on? Let's start with the basics, fire behavior. Oh, Joe, I took that 15 years ago. I read the book, I'm all set. Really? What can you tell me about fire behavior? Can you tell me in true terms how fire travels, conduction, convection, radiation? What do all those mean to us in a fire? Think of the pictures that are in the book. They're erroneous. They don't show us what it really is doing. But you think, since you read the chapter and you were able to memorize it and pass the test, you know all about fire behavior? It is the science. Second thing is smoke. And it's all part of fire behavior. Smoke is what's telling us what is probably going to happen, where fire is an event that has already happened. So we need to understand what those things are. But then we get into modern fire science. I had the great honor in 2010 of going to a class, first time offered here, by a kid named Steve Kerber. And Steve was talking about this thing about modern fire science. I'll never forget, I walked into the room, I got one of the last seats, I was there 30 minutes ahead of time. And he got up and started talking about it, and you could hear a pin drop. He exploded the fire service with this tremendous wealth of new knowledge. Because see, all of our fire behavior then was being based upon things that happened in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. And he brought us forward. Yet I still go places and talk with volunteers who tell me things like, when I talk about modern fire science, I don't know if I really buy in. What do you mean you don't buy in? It's proven fact, it's science, it's there. You don't buy in, what does that mean? It either means you're, forgive me, but you're really ignorant, or B, you're afraid of new things, or you're afraid of trying to learn new things because you just don't have the time or the aptitude or the desire to. That's all negative. We need to understand these things. Then we go back further into training. We think about SCBA training. We think about hose handling. We think about ladders. We think about search, big one, search. And all of those things, every one of those things presents to you as a firefighter risk. Because hose handling, what are you doing? You're making entry into a burning building. What do you know about it? Not much, except it has a fire in it that is not controlled or contained. It's dangerous. It's high risk. Is it ready to flash? Is it not ready to flash? What's going on? Is it spreading? Is it over your head and you don't see it? It's all risk, folks. It's all risk. Everything we do is risk. Everything. And if we don't train and train hard and train properly, we're doing nothing to reduce the risk to ourselves. And please keep in mind that when we talk about risk, it usually comes down to two things. It's risk reduction or risk management helps us to reduce two things. Technically, they call it loss or injury, but it's not loss, it's death. No one likes to use the D word, death. You're either going to die or you're going to get injured. There's no in between it. We're trying to keep you safe. I want you to go home to your family, to your loved ones. I want you to live a long and prosperous and happy life. And if we don't address this risk now, if we don't address it today, it's not going to get any better. We have an opportunity. Please, please, please consider this book. A friend of mine, I gave him my draft when I wrote it, and he was honest enough that he would be brutally honest with me. And I asked him what he thought. And it was the best compliment I ever got. He said, Joe, I read it cover to cover. And it was like I was sitting at the kitchen table talking to you. You're not talking down at me. You're sharing, you're teaching, you're expanding my knowledge. That's what this book will do. No gobbledygook, no intellectualism. It will help us to better understand and control risk on our fire grounds. So I think I've taken enough of your time. I thank you for tuning in, and hope to see you. If you do attend my class tomorrow, please come up and tell me you watched the podcast, and all the best. And after class, by the way, I will be signing books. So maybe we'll see you at the Fire Engineering Bookstore. All the best. Stay safe. Be well.